center.
Oh, usually. Thank you.
How are you, Senator Berglund?
This meeting of the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will come to order. We have one bill on the agenda today, Senate File 238. Senator Sharon, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Marty. My name is Senator Kathy Sharon, and I'm here to present Senate File Number 238, which is legislation developed to protect the public from the negative impact of secondhand smoke. Today, you will hear testimony from persons who encourage you to support a strong piece of legislation. It's based on the growth of scientific evidence demonstrating conclusively that secondhand smoke is not safe for the general public at any level or dose, and that the only assurance we have of disrupting this negative health hazard is by eliminating smoking as a practice in the workplace. And today, you will hear testimony from those who will dismiss this legislation as unnecessary, overzealous, or too onerous, an expectation given the economic consequences to businesses and to the nonprofits who depend on revenues for charitable gambling. Now, of course, there is the very, very important issue of personal freedoms and rights, and the responsibility along with that to define the limitations of those rights by the legislature when one person's behavior negatively impacts others. Over the past 20 years, hundreds of scientific studies have shown the dangers associated with secondhand smoke. In 1986, the Surgeon General already demonstrated in his scientific research that involuntary smoking is a cause of disease, including lung cancer in non-smokers. In 1992, United States Environmental Protection Agency reported widespread exposure to secondhand smoke is a serious and substantial public health hazard. It's responsible for 3,000 lung cancer deaths a year. In 1997, the National Cancer Institute linked coronary heart disease, nasal sinus cancer, and sudden infant death with exposure to secondhand smoke. The point I'm trying to make is that it's over a 20-year period that a number of scientific research has been conducted, some I've listed here, that have developed the basis for the study that was presented in 2006 by the Surgeon General and released the most important and most comprehensive scientific report ever produced on health harms of secondhand smoke. What were the findings? Massive and conclusive scientific evidence that documents adverse effects of involuntary smoking, including cancer and cardiovascular diseases. And the report further concludes that there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. And further, that there is no known ventilation system that can adequately reduce the particles and the chemicals that are the source of health concern. The report further states the total absence of exposure is the best and most beneficial way to reduce the risk to the public. For those of us who are concerned about measurable outcomes, it might be of interest to you to know that in a study at St. Helena, Montana, these were of hospital admissions for heart attack. There was a decline of 40% admissions to heart attacks during the first 6 months following a comprehensive smoke-free air law that was put in effect. But when that law was suspended, there was a rebound of heart attacks at St. Helena's Montana Hospital. And this study was replicated in Colorado. In statewide polls, the public has communicated clearly that the state is needing to become involved in establishing smoke-free laws to protect the public, especially workers from the toxic effects of smoke. Local governments are taking action around the state. 16 smoke-free ordinances have been enacted. 17 states have laws in place that require 100% free workplace, smoke-free workplace. And as a result of both local and statewide laws, 6,595 municipalities have 100% smoke-free workplace ordinances. 10 countries, including Norway, Sweden, Spain, Ireland, Italy, Bermuda, have smoke-free workplaces. In addition, organizations whose missions are health and safety, whose research dollars are spent studying health practices and solutions, have signed resolutions supporting a strong workplace protection. It includes, but it's not limited to, in Minnesota, the American Cancer Society, the American Lung Association, the American College of Cardiology, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American Heart Association, the Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians, the Minnesota Hospital Association, the Institute of Public Health, and on. As a matter of fact, I brought a list of them that I could pass around if you'd like to see. They're too long to name here today. The Surgeon General report is not one person's report. It's important for you to understand when we're talking about that report that it's a report that has been written by 22 experts and consolidated it into 10 major chapters. Those chapters were then reviewed again by 40 other scientists for validity and consistency, and then again by 30 more scientists for scientific integrity. One of the chapters is on ventilation, a hope many of us, including me, had as a method to resolve this issue. But the findings of multiple scientists having reviewed these many studies on the issue determined 50 carcinogens in the side stream of secondhand smoke. There is a causal relationship to multiple health problems, and exposure of non-smokers to secondhand smoke cannot be controlled by air cleaning or mechanical air exchange. The strength in these findings is the consistency of the data over a long period of time and the wide range of scientists reviewing and writing on the findings in this report. The debate over the validity of science is good. We need to have debate about the validity of science. It's a part of what makes it solid and reliable, and this study has met that obligation. I'm saying this and making a point about this to you today because in this same report from the Surgeon General also speaks to activities of the tobacco industry and its consultants that have gone way beyond credible process of challenge of scientific research through organized tactics to undermine this evidence, including funding a journal for persons to quote. This effort is described by the Surgeon General as biased and attempted to create controversy, even as the scientific community has reached consensus about the dangers of secondhand smoke. The economic impact of secondhand smoke on the lives of people and businesses needs to be considered along with other economic issues on bars, for example. Smokers have twice the lost production time per week, a significant loss to businesses. Families lost 49,000 family members to secondhand smoke at an enormous personal loss to their family and financial losses to their families as well. The cost of health care illness associated with secondhand smoke is reported to be nearly $1 billion in Minnesota alone, and that's not counting the loss to work productivity associated with employees affected by exposure. I'm here representing those persons who cannot be here to represent themselves because they are already victims of secondhand smoke. And I'm here to represent those of us who we know will be victims, but whom we cannot point to or pinpoint today. And I'm here to advance a strong workplace protection that has been advanced by cities and counties, and that those cities and counties and businesses would like us to try to even as best we can the playing field for the competitive marketplace. And I'm here to help this discussion stay focused on the only real basis for which government can intervene when a behavior of one group creates a significant health impact on another. It is in the interest of the public through its government to protect the worker and the public from secondhand smoke. I'd like to go through the bill. I'm assuming everybody has a copy of the bill. Senate file number 238, strengthens the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act. Section 1 modifies in this section the public policy behind the Clean Indoor Act and acts to eliminate rather than limit smoking in public places and indoor, especially in indoor workplaces. Section 2 is simply adding a definition of indoor area. Section 3 defines place of employment as any indoor area where two or more persons engage in employment or perform services without compensation for which persons are usually paid. Includes vehicles and private residences when they are used as places of business. Section 4 modifies the definition of public place. It's expanded to include bars and references places of work and public transportation, which are now defined separately. Section 5 clarifies the definition of smoking. It's hard to imagine one wouldn't know what that was. Section 6 adds the definition of public transportation. It talks about enclosed buses, transit stops, taxis, vans, limousines. Section 7 modifies smoking prohibitions. This is a... Subdivision 1, for example, prohibits smoking in places of employment and in public transportation with exceptions and deletes the reference to designated smoking areas. Subdivision 2 strengthens the current bans on smoking in daycare centers and in daycare homes during their hours of operation. Subdivision 3 modifies the regulation. It's currently that smoking is prohibited in any area of the healthcare-related facility other than a nursing home board care facility. This section extends the total prohibition to apply to licensed residential facilities for children. It allows smoking only by patients and residents of facilities for adults and only in a separate enclosed room. And limits on smoking are part of, and limits actually allows smoking as a part of scientific study. Where if that were limited, that is deleted. Section 8 modifies the enforcement responsibilities of proprietors, persons or entities in charge of a non-smoking area. Section 8 speaks to those in charge asking people who are in the prohibited areas to refrain from smoking, ask those persons to leave as the first approach to dealing with non-compliance. And if the person refuses to leave, the person in charge must handle the situation consistent with lawful methods for dealing with disorderly conduct or trespassing. Section 9, subdivision 1, talks about language that's deleted elsewhere in the law that allows smoking by participants in scientific studies. Subdivision 2 speaks to smoking as an exemption for Native Americans as a part of traditional spiritual cultural ceremonies. And subdivision 3 states that except for limits on smoking in daycare homes, the Act does not prohibit smoking in private residences or automobiles when they are not used as places of employment or in hotel or motel rooms. In Section 10, this section relates to governing enforcement and penalties. Under Subdivision 2, Paragraph A makes it a misdemeanor for a proprietor or a person or an entity that controls an area. If they fail to control the area, that is a misdemeanor. If they knowingly fail to comply, Paragraph B restates current law, making it a petty misdemeanor for any person to smoke in an area where smoking is restricted. Paragraph C and D prohibit retaliation against persons who report violations or exercise any right to be in a smoke-free environment. Section 12, unless there's other questions for the rest of the section, Section 12 repeals Minnesota Statutes 144.45, allowing the designation of smoking areas in public places where smoking is permitted. And I did make a copy of that statute for you to review in case you are unable to have that down by
Senator
heart.
Sharon, it is now. We now attach them to the back of the bill, so they do have it in their back.
Oh, you have. Okay, great. Thank you very much. So that is a summation of the Senate File 238, and I know that there are persons here to testify.
Okay. Well, Senator Sharon, I'm going to try and ask. There are a lot of people who have asked to testify. I'm going to try and ask both sides to try and limit their testimony to a half hour each. And I will wonder, would you like to call your witnesses first, or would you like to have me call them from the list we've been given? Should I call them?
You can call them. I appreciate that.
And the
that.
First
Thank
one we
you.
Have is Dr. Jim Young from Minnesota Medical Association and the Cancer Society. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Sure. Thank you very much. My name is James Young. I'm a family physician with Ridgeview Medical Group in Chanhassen. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Medical Association and the American Cancer Society. Members of the committee, thank you for your time today. In 2006, the Surgeon General of the United States issued a report on the health consequences of involuntary exposure to tobacco smoke. In this report, it laid out very clearly what the connections are between secondhand smoke exposure and human health. Both in adults and in children, the links are clear. There are connections to disease, whether it's lung cancer, acute respiratory infections of the upper or lower tract, ear infections, asthma exacerbations, or what have you. There are clear and causal connections between the exposure of secondhand smoke and these diseases. Interestingly enough, the report did not stop there. It went further and indicated that there is no risk-free level of secondhand smoke exposure. Let me say that again. There is no safe, acceptable dose of secondhand smoke that a human being should be exposed to. So the conclusions are driven by evidence from some of the best and brightest minds in our country, reviewed by scores of scientific researchers, medical experts, and doctors. The consensus in the community is driven by the strength of evidence, not by advocacy. The problem is that the opposition to this legislation, whether it's at the county, the community, or the state level, has never been able to refute this with evidence. They have not been able to provide scientific data to counter the conclusions listed in this report. They will rather dismiss it as junk science. The fact is, though, that ignoring the truth doesn't mean it's not there. The opposition is very quick to point out that, well, if we place ventilation, smoke eaters, or what have you, in all these bars and establishments, then everybody can stay, everybody will be happy and no problems. And while the Surgeon General's report does, in fact, concede that large particulates are removed from the air by these devices, small, gaseous, and really the main cancer-causing particles in secondhand smoke is not removed, not cleared from these rooms. The bottom line, and again, this is very clearly laid out in the report, ventilation does not work. We hear a lot about, from the opposition, we hear a lot about the economic impact, that if we enact legislation like this, the hospitality industry in Minnesota will cease to exist. The reality is that in every community, every county, and every state where this has been employed, the economic impact has been negligible. Close to home in Hennepin County, when the comprehensive smoking ban was enacted there, the day after the amendment to the smoke ban was issued, the report came out that there were increases in liquor sales, increases in restaurant starts, and decreases in hospitality industry unemployment. Finally, the opposition speaks often, both in hearings like this and on the radio, about the restriction of personal and civil liberties, that if you as legislators enact this ban, it'll be the greatest infringement upon civil liberties since the October Revolution of 1917. The bill, as it is written today, does nothing of the sort. It does not say that a smoker does not have a right to smoke within the state of Minnesota. It simply says that a smoker must exercise a sense of personal responsibility as well as personal freedom. They have an obligation to not harm the health of others. Furthermore, those individuals who have made a conscious decision to not smoke in the state of Minnesota ought to have a right to go to any doggone restaurant or bar they wish to go to. The bottom line is this: secondhand smoke makes people sick. There is no risk-free amount of smoke that is safe for people. Ventilation does not work, and the evidence to the contrary is just not there, nor is it credible. It is time for the legislature, I think, to take steps to put this into law and to protect the health of everybody, not everybody, across the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Young. Questions from the committee. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Doctor, for coming and testifying. I have a couple of questions, I guess. You said in your testimony that there's no risk-free level of secondhand smoke, and I think that's true. I think that there are very few things in life that there are no risks attached to. The question that I have, though, is to understand what the relative risk is of secondhand smoke compared to other things that we commonly expose ourselves to. You also said in your testimony that there is no that secondhand smoke was not safe at any level or any dose. It's got no threshold of toleration. And I'm surprised at that because I'm not a scientist, but I've been over the past couple of years reading about this issue, and I can't find any other chemical for which anyone says there is no safe level or no non-toxic level of any kind of carcinogen or other kind of. I mean, there are things that are toxic at high dose, but at very low doses, they may, in fact, sometimes be helpful to people. And so what I'm questioning is when you say that for secondhand smoke that the science says that this is the one thing in the universe that we know of for which there is no threshold that is acceptable, I find that a little surprising. I want you to try to expand on that because I've sought the answers to these questions from people who have been advocating for this, and no one has ever brought me any testimony to establish the truth of the claim you just made.
Well, it's a very, Senator, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a very fair question. If you forgive me, I'll take the second part first. The second part of your question is had essentially to do with what degree of health, what the relative risk is. And I think that depends on what disease you're looking at specifically. And, you know, again, the Surgeon General's report is, lays out a number of different disorders and medical problems that are related to secondhand smoke. What I would point out to the group or to the committee here, first of all, is that secondhand smoke is not one chemical. It's a multitude of chemicals in that smoke. Many different toxic compounds, both large and small particulates, gases, and toxins that come out from not only the exhalation of the smoke, but also from the actual process of burning the nicotine, the paper, et cetera. So, for example, when we talk about cardiovascular disease, we have found that in the evidence in the report shows that within short periods of time, you can actually see increases in levels of blood pressure by secondhand smoke exposure. Within minutes of being exposed to it, you can actually begin to see the elevation of blood pressure, both systolic and diastolic pressure, the top and the bottom numbers. We also know that in those short periods of time, the platelets, which are the cellular elements in the blood that facilitate clotting, can actually begin to go into sort of a hyperactive state. They will be more likely to come together over areas of wall narrowing. For example, if you are somebody who once in a while has heart, you know, a little bit of a twinge of chest pain, going into an environment where secondhand smoke is prevalent might make that worse. In other words, it may actually increase the blood pressure, increase the narrowing in the arteries. So that is just one example, and we could spend an entire afternoon talking about the different examples here. But that also goes to the first question, which is this: when the Surgeon General says there is no acceptable level of secondhand smoke exposure, it goes to information like that. Now, obviously, to be perfectly honest, you're not going to walk into a bar, smoke, you know, get a dose of secondhand smoke for 15 minutes and come out with a lung nodule. Obviously, being perfectly intellectually honest, you're not going to walk out with a lung cancer after 15 minutes of exposure. On that issue, because that is an issue that's hotly contested, the evidence that exists speaks to a 20 to 25% relative risk increase of lung cancer in active smoking. So in other words, if you physically light up and draw a breath. The estimates for secondhand smoke exposure are lower than that, admittedly, and I believe the numbers are between the 5 and 10% relative risk increase compared to non-smokers, and that also compares to the active smokers. So I'm not sure if that answers your question in full.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Doctor. And I guess it partially does, but it kind of gets at what I think is one of the central issues. What we're saying is that there is a public health risk here that is of such a high magnitude that we need to do what is a rather extraordinary measure, which is in effect banning it from use anywhere except a person's home. And I think it is, to me, and I would think to others, a critical distinction of just what that risk level is, that to say that it's a heightened risk level by being in a room with secondhand smoke may be true, but it may also be trivial if that risk level that you're now at is not any worse than, say, the risk you would get from drinking coffee every day or using a cell phone or all the other kind of things that we do. And the point I'm trying to make is that I know that tobacco smoke has lots of things in it, and there are lots of things that aren't very healthy for people in it, but it would seem to me that the doses that people are exposed to is a critical factor, and that is the very thing that no one has been able to testify to say that these dose levels are a significant health risk to people. And to me, the assertion has always been that you have an elevated risk by being exposed to them, which I think is largely true, but the context of where those dose levels are has never been explained. I think the second question that's related to that is in your testimony and in the introduction of the bill, the point is made that this bill is going to seek to prevent any use of tobacco in any place, private or public, with the possible exception of your car or your home. And as a pediatric or family physician, isn't it troubling to say that the 25 or 30% of the people that are going to smoke, now their only choice is smoke at home where their children are? And the children have no possible right to leave, or unless we're going to, you know, do something to deal with that. But isn't that troubling to say that there are going to be a certain number of people in the population that are going to smoke? No one is saying that we're going to ban it or that people are going to all quit smoking. But we are saying that the only place they can smoke is at home. And I'm just wondering whether that troubles you to say that that's the only place now people will be able to smoke.
Well, certainly that's troubling. I mean, it really is. And, you know, as a family physician, you know, when my patients come in, whether I'm doing a well-child examination with a parent and family or an obstetrical patient, which I do work in, or just a patient who's walking in off the street, they do get that speech from me, I think they get that from a lot of doctors. I think the problem is that in order to enforce that kind of level of restriction, I think that would require legislative action, which I think is contrary to our democracy, in the sense that you're going into people's homes and mandating what they do in their homes. However, I think in a public establishment, and now we can get into a debate about whether it's private. I'm probably not the person to have a discussion about what's private versus public establishment or what the legal definition of that is. I'll leave that to the people who are far more schooled in the law than I am. But, you know, it seems to me that the legislature at the and the counties have an interest in doing this. You know, for example, we have health departments that go in and don't just restrict how the people in the kitchen work. If they find a violation of the public health code, they shut the establishment down. I think that those are reasonable things that the government does do to protect public health every day. What we're talking about here in this legislation is one more measure to protect the health of people who patronize these establishments. I think to go beyond that is a very different animal and a different argument altogether. But I agree with your initial assertion. It does concern me that people smoke around their kids. We as a profession counsel relentlessly against that. But we live in the United States of America. It's very difficult to go into a person's private home and tell them what they can and cannot do.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Young. Next call up, I'll start calling up people two at a time, Ramel Jones and Molly Kwasniewski.
Chair Marty, while they're coming up, may
yes.
I make
yes,
a
go
comment
ahead.
In regard to this? I thought that the questions that Senator Hahn asked were important. And I would just want to emphasize that when we're talking about level of risk, what the Surgeon General is saying is that we aren't able to determine a reasonable level of risk at this time. We may get better at that in the future. But there are other part of the question was, are there other health hazards that we interfere in without knowing exactly what the level of risk is? And the answer to that is yes. Asbestos is an example, and also E. coli are two of several examples where we do not tolerate any level of risk without coming to the conclusion that absolutely no level of risk is tolerable. And we want to remember that the length of exposure, we're talking about not people that are coming 15 minutes in and out, but we're talking about people who are working in the workplace where they're engaged in, because of work, sustained exposure to
secondhand smoke. So it's not just the public coming in and out of the doors.
Thank you. Go ahead, either one of you, whichever one wish to go first. Please identify yourself.
My name is Romel Jones. I live in Moose Lake, a small town about 100 miles north of here. We were the first city in Minnesota to pass an ordinance eliminating smoking in our restaurants. I owned Arts Cafe for 27 years. Being able to work in clean air was wonderful. Unless you have actually spent 6 to 8 hours a day in a smoke-filled room, you have no idea how awful it can be. Over the years, you've heard every argument there is about the health effects of smoke and secondhand smoke. There's nothing new that I can tell you. But if I were to tell you that 1,000 people died from food poisoning, or that maybe 500 people contracted polio, or even 100 children died from lead poisoning, you would rush out to find out why and to try to fix what was happening. Very few people die of food poisoning, lead paint, or communicable diseases anymore. We found out why people were dying, and we fixed and regulated the causes. Yet secondhand smoke alone accounts for more than 38,000 deaths every year. How can 38,000 deaths be ignored when the solution to the majority of these deaths is to make public places and workplaces smoke-free? I can't tell you how many people will go out of business if Minnesota becomes a smoke-free state, but I can tell you what I do know, and that is that I recently sold Arts Cafe at the end of the most profitable year that I've ever had. That was after being smoke-free for 7 years. It didn't hurt. It only helped make business better. And thank you for allowing me to tell you this.
Thank you, Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen.
May I ask Ms. Jones a question, please? Mr. Chair, Ms. Jones, did you say you owned the cafe for 27 years?
Yes, I did.
Ms. Jones, why didn't you choose to go smoke-free in your own facility much sooner?
I was afraid. I was afraid of all the negative things that people said would happen. I then watched my mother and my father both die of lung cancer. And more, I saw the really terrible effects that smoking and secondhand smoke would have. And when I got a call from the American Lung Association asking what I thought of having Arts Cafe and the cafes in Moose Lake smoke-free, my first reaction was, how can I help you? The smoke was so bad in Arts Cafe, there would be just layers of smoke in there. I will freely admit, I was afraid to do it on my own. When I had somebody, in this case being the Lung Association, helping me do that, I was the first one to stand up and say, let's get this passed.
Mr. Chair,
thank you. Mr. Jones, I frankly find that a little bit troubling because I live in a wonderful town, well, south of a wonderful town, not in town. Mm-hmm. We have several restaurants. And one owner of one of the longest established restaurant in town decided that he also did not like the smoke in his restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't advocate for everyone having to do what he wanted. He did it himself for his own restaurant. And I think that was a good way to do it. And I appreciate his stepping forward and making that step. And guess what? I choose to eat there because I like smoke-free establishments. Mm-hmm. But he chose it because he owned it, and he didn't push it off on someone else because it's what he wanted.
One of the things that I think drove me as well is that the restaurant business is so regulated now. There's nothing you can do in a restaurant that isn't regulated, from where you buy your food to how you store it, how you cook it, how you serve it, the temperatures that you hold, the cleanliness of the kitchen, the basement, the employees. Absolutely everything is regulated there. And as time went on, I began to see how strictly regulated I was as far as the food was concerned. But the air was absolutely awful. I mean, it was so bad you could see the layers of it in there. And I began to put it together that it didn't make sense to me that the food could be so regulated, but the cleanliness of the air wasn't. And someone asked me during the year when this was beginning to happen if I would go smoke-free even if the ordinance didn't pass. And I had to honestly say, and I was afraid to do it because I was afraid the ordinance wouldn't pass, but I said no, I would go smoke-free because I could see plainly, clearly, see how important it was. And I didn't want the time to come when Arts Cafe would be sold and they could go back to smoking in there, because I personally believe it's one of the greatest health hazards that we have.
Thank you, Ms. Kwasniewski.
Hi.
Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Lori.
Yes, I would just like to echo some of Ms. Jones' statements here today. Moose Lake is 11 miles east of my home, and I was a resident in the area during this time when Moose Lake was going through this really very difficult and scary transition, and Rommel bravely led a charge that was critical to our area, and her testimony today really reflects that thought and anguish that she put into this issue, and I'd just like to say thank you for coming today and testifying to Moose Lake's wonderful experience with the smoke-free air, thank you for your efforts.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Molly Kwasniewski, and I live in Cortland, Minnesota. I'm here today to share with you a personal story of an incident that began my endeavors with the Mankato Area Smoke-Free Coalition, and to tell you why I care so deeply about protecting the air we breathe from secondhand smoke. There was a day in the summer of 2005 when my son asked my husband and I to bring him to an event at the downtown Buffalo Wild Wings. They were airing a WWE pay-per-view event that night, and a lot of his friends were going to be there. My son, being a typical young teenage boy, loved to watch wrestling. What's not typical with him is that he has cystic fibrosis, a disease that affects his lungs and his digestive system. When we arrived, we found it to be very packed with people, including many families with kids. I knew immediately upon entering the establishment that this was not going to work. The problem was that it was so smoke-filled that I was even having difficulty breathing. All I could think about was my son being exposed to all the secondhand smoke and the horrible effects it could have on him, not to mention the rest of us. We found a table to sit at. After about 5 minutes, I explained to him that we could not stay, that this was a health issue not only for him, but for all of us. He was very angry with me for making him leave. He looked at me with tears in his eyes and knew I was right, and was silent. At that point, my heart melted. I knew this was something he would have to deal with the rest of his life. His right to breathe clean air in a public place was taken away. I realized that most of the bartenders and waitresses in the Mankato Buffalo Wild Wings were of college age. Did they realize the sacrifice that they were making by working in such an environment? Would my son sacrifice his own health to do the same when he's college age? I vowed to him and myself that I was going to get involved and do something about this. I also work in respiratory care, and I teach pulmonary rehabilitation. I see the firsthand effects from smoking and secondhand smoke on people with emphysema, how they fight every day for air. I've also held the hand of a woman dying from lung cancer that never smoked. I joined the Mankato Area Smoke-Free Coalition soon after that night, and I'm very proud that the Mankato citizens care enough about their health and the health of others to finally take a stand for what they believe was the right thing to do. And on election day, 69% of Mankato voters affirmed our comprehensive smoke-free ordinance by voting yes for health. Now the students in Mankato who work in bars and restaurants in the evening to help get through college aren't being exposed to the harmful, deadly effects of secondhand smoke. They are breathing cleaner air. And those of you that represent the people of Minnesota have a duty to do what's right and protect all employees from secondhand smoke, no matter where they work and no matter where they live in Minnesota. I ask that you support the Freedom to Breathe Act so it can become a law.
Thank you, Ms. Kwasniewski. Questions from the committee? If not, thank you both very much. Next, I'll call on Betsy Goetz and Bernadette Schlebeck. Go ahead, either one of you.
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Gates. I'm a manager and co-owner of a 300-seat restaurant in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Ours is a family-owned supper club established by my parents about 34 years ago. About 5.5 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. She had different tumors in her throat. Yes, it was a smoking-related cancer. Like many of her generation, my mother smoked. In fact, one of the first things the oncologist told her was that her prognosis would be better if she had quit smoking. My mother had quit smoking over 12 years earlier. Unfortunately for her, the business she was in was the bar and restaurant business. She spent much of the decade before tending bar and working directly in a smoking environment. And although she and my father were not actively involved in the business at the time of her diagnosis, she still spent much of her time there greeting customers and staying familiar with the business. Although she never held a cigarette in her hand in those 12 years, she didn't have to. She was still smoking. This January 6, 2007, was the 5-year anniversary of my mother's death. She was 67. That's my story. Sorry. But we've heard it before. We've heard the story of kids with asthma. We've heard the story of a mother, of a child with cystic fibrosis. We've heard countless testimonies from the medical community. Yet the debate always comes back somehow to personal freedoms, personal choice, and economics. It leaves health behind. We have since made the choice at our restaurant to go smoke-free. April 25th will mark 2 years, and the date was chosen to honor my mother's birthday. And I do say making the choice to go smoke-free has been an incredible business decision for us. Business is amazing. We're constantly being thanked by patrons, by staff, for going smoke-free. People who are unable to go to many establishments now have a place to go. In fact, a big argument by most of the opponents of this bill is one of economics. If economics were the basis of my argument, I should be opposing this bill. Because if more businesses go smoke-free, I may lose some of the business that I have gained because people will have more places to go. I still don't know if that is or should be the argument. I don't think there's a big debate anymore about the health effects of secondhand smoke, regardless of what we've debated. In fact, I think much of that information may have already been decided over 31 years ago when the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act was originally passed. I do admit I get quite irritated by people who tell bar restaurant employees that if they don't want to work in an environment with smoking, they should get a job doing something else. My response is always the same. Oh, a job doing something else that is already protected by the government like yours? Get another job. For much of my staff, this is their other job. I have teachers who cannot make ends meet on their salary, who serve a couple of days a week. I have a business professional who has medical bills for his daughter to pay for. I have parents for whom this job allows them the flexibility they need to care for their children. And yes, much of my staff, like many establishments, is college students. But I will assume all or most of you were college students at one time. Were you any less of a person then? Was your health any less important then than it is now? In today's society, where equal rights is such a hot topic, why do they consider someone working in the hospitality industry to have fewer rights than an employee of a bank or a hospital, factory, or an office? I'm not one who believes in taking away someone's rights or personal freedoms. I believe you have a right to have an alcoholic beverage whenever you want, but urine rights infringe on my safety if you get behind the wheel of a car. So the government stepped in and made a law making drinking and driving illegal for the personal safety of everyone. No one complains that you can't smoke in a hospital. Everyone seems to understand that secondhand smoke would jeopardize the health of the patients. Yet, there seems to be no logical question of personal freedom and rights with a total disregard for hospitality workers and non-smoking patrons' health just because other people feel the need to have a beer and a cigarette at the same time. I imagine there are quite a few people in this room that do smoke, but there doesn't seem to be a question that they can't smoke here. Please do not continue to tell my staff or the staff of other establishments that they do not have the same right afforded to you, sitting right here doing your job.
Thank you, Ms. Getz. Senator Oregon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gates, first of all, thank you for going smoke-free in your facility. I would choose it over one that has smoking, in spite of the fact that I oppose this bill. I admire that you did that for your facility, and I appreciate that for all of us that don't smoke. But the one thing that I did want to mention, when you talk about being smoke-free in this building, I think it's should very carefully be pointed out that this is a publicly owned building. That's the difference.
Thank you. Ms. Schlebeck.
My name is Bernadette Klebeck, and I am a veteran of the United States Air Force and the Minnesota Army National Guard. I am also the first vice commander of the Coon Rapids American Legion. I would like to make it clear that I am not here representing any organization. I am here speaking of myself and my experience as a veteran. My main role as first vice commander is membership, which unfortunately is dwindling down quickly across the nation, and Minnesota is no exception. As I make phone calls and talk to veterans, the number one reason that veterans do not join veterans clubs is because of the smoking. As veterans, we must remember our main mission is to honor the dead by helping the living. Unfortunately, many needs of veterans are going unheard and unmet because so many veterans are unable to play a role in veterans organizations because of the smoking. To quote the national commander of the VFW, Gary Krivias, new members who want to believe that the VFW is more than just a bar. Soldiers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan have families. They have spent long periods of time away from them and do not want to come home and join organizations where they cannot bring their families. In Coon Rapids, where smoking is allowed, the club is unable to donate money to community organizations because of decreased membership and low sales. Exempting American Legions and VFWs from smoke-free policies will not save veterans clubs. If veterans organizations are going to survive, they must change to meet the needs of today's soldiers. They need to become family-friendly. This movement has already started across the country, where veterans clubs have become gyms, daycare centers, and coffee shops. If these changes do not happen, I fear that veterans organizations will die out and veterans are going to start losing their benefits. I joined the military to serve my country and protect the Constitution, not Philip Morris. It was an honor for me to serve my country, and for me, it was an obligation. But I, like many veterans, did not come home to die. As a veteran, it saddens me to see veterans on opposite sides on this issue. But we can come together by putting the smoking issue aside and moving our clubs in a new direction. After all, the needs of the veterans ought to be more important than a cigarette. There are four other veterans here with me, and at this time, I would like them to stand and be recognized.
You agree with her.
I would also like to point out that the number one argument I hear about this is government intrusion and personal rights. But I'd like to also point out it is that we, the people, are the government. You are merely our representatives. When you talk about government intrusion, it is we, the people, that said by overwhelmingly 69%. And when you talk about government is the problem, you are saying we, the people, are the problem. Less government is less people power. We, the people, by 69%, have said this is what we want for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schlebeck.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Corrin.
Mr. Chairman, all I wanted to just say is I wanted to say that to the veterans, thank you for your service to our country. I speak for all the senators here. We certainly appreciate your service and appreciate your testimony, too.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming to testify, both of you. And I also would like to extend my gratitude to the veterans in the room today. And I'm a veteran myself, and I'm also a registered nurse. And I support the smoking ban. And I agree that it's not a veterans issue. And clearly, there are veterans on both sides. But I would like to point out the fact that the new national commander of the VFW has come out in opposition to smoking in the clubs. So I just want to quote him. His name is Gary Krivias. He says, "We are a democratic organization that is letting 20% of the population tell us that the VFW posts will fail if people can't smoke inside. That's bunk." And the article goes off to say that this new leader of the VFW is calling for an end to smoking in the posts. Mm-hmm. So as a veteran, I just want to put that out there, too. And again, thank you for your service.
Thank you. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony. I also am a veteran, Army veteran, served a year in Vietnam. But as far as I know, there's nothing that prohibits a VFW or Foreign Legion from banning smoking right now. It seems to me that they could do that if the majority of the people that operate the club wanted to do it. And so I suspect if they haven't done it, it's because most of the members don't want it to be non-smoking at this point. And so I'm not quite sure that I understand the argument that how it's better for the state to come into an organization and say, we're going to insist on something, you do something that the majority of your members don't wish to do. But it may be, maybe it happens over time. There may be clubs that do ban smoking. I think that you're probably right. I think it would attract more younger members and more families if they weren't. But I think that that may be a decision for the club. But I also wanted to ask, and maybe Ms. Getz or both of you, I know I would assume that your restaurant is under the regulation of OSHA. And I just wanted to know what OSHA's view on banning tobacco or cigarette smoking from places of employment is. Do you know what their position is on this issue?
I don't know what their position is as far as regulating for staff. Now, I do know, obviously, that smoking is not allowed anywhere in food production or behind the bar, et cetera. Obviously, that is considered a health risk for them.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Getz. And I don't know. I've gotten some information. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've gotten information that says that OSHA has looked at environmental tobacco smoke or secondhand smoke many, many, many times and has concluded that there is no occupational health hazard to people who work in those environments. Now, maybe they're wrong, but they have scientists that study this issue as well, and their job is to protect workers in a work environment. If they're concluding that whatever the risk is, that it isn't substantial enough to cause it to be banned, I guess I'd wonder about that. And if they're not supporting this, I guess I would wonder why they're not supporting it. But I think, again, as Senator Worgan has talked about this, you have talked about that you don't want to infringe on rights of people, but much of your testimony was about the effect of secondhand smoke on children and young people who are probably, I would wager, would become more adversely affected were this ban to go into place, because then the only place that people could smoke would be at home, where their children are. You could argue that today the people who have children have some recourse if they want to smoke. They can go down to the bar, or they can go to the bowling alley, or they can go to their favorite restaurant where they have smoking, and they can indulge their habit there. But if we say that's not possible, then they're going to smoke at home. And wouldn't that then tend to exacerbate whatever the effects may be on children if that's the only place for people to have to smoke is at home?
So your argument then is that, that a child will be exposed to smoke, and therefore that would be, you're stating, possibly a health hazard, but it's okay if that child now turns 18 and they're now exposed to it because that's where they happen to work?
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Getz, no, that's not my argument. My point is I have questioned, and over the past 2 or 3 years as this debate has gone on, continually asked for the proponents of these measures to bring the data that shows the relative risks of being exposed to these things over and put it in the context of other risks to demonstrate what the magnitude of that risk is compared to other things that we expose ourselves to. And nobody has brought me any data. No one's pointed to me. I suspect that there isn't any compelling evidence to say this is a huge risk. But my point is that if you claim it to be a great risk for people to willingly on their own go to a place where there is smoking or work in a place, if they choose to do that, we say we can't tolerate that. But we are willing to tolerate saying that the only place that people can smoke is in a home where you have young children.
Well, Senator, then under your argument, why don't we just make meth legal?
Excuse me.
And have them so they can produce meth.
Are you done, Chair? Senator Hand, go ahead.
I was asking a question of the other witness, and I'm just trying to get
Are you done with the question?
I think so.
Oh, did you want to respond, Ms. Getz, or?
Yes, Senator, I would. If that's your argument, then let's make producing meth legal so we can stop producing meth in the home and start producing it. That's your argument, if you have it. How about just not smoke at home as well?
And I agree. If someone, what risk do we accept? There is differing arguments about the level of the risk. A lot of us choose to eat organic foods because we don't know the risk of the different chemicals in our foods. What risk do we accept? Is any risk enough? If it's a 1% chance, is that something we accept? Or do we have to wait till it gets to be a 10% chance? What are we saying if it's a small risk? Isn't that enough?
Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Senator Hahn, who keeps asking for what's the relative risk, I'd like to quote from a letter from Commissioner Mandernick, in which she is citing the Surgeon General's report in June. And she states, the health consequences of involuntary exposure to tobacco smoke, or that's the report, the health consequences of involuntary exposure to tobacco smoke. And based on a thorough review of available scientific research, the report unequivocally declared there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. In fact, the report noted that non-smokers exposed to secondhand smoke at home or work increased their risk of developing heart disease by 25% to 30% and lung cancer by 20% to 30%. This is a major concern because nearly half of all non-smoking Americans are still regularly exposed to secondhand smoke. And it says, the report goes on to say that even brief secondhand smoke exposure can cause immediate harm.
And
briefly, we don't want to make this into a debate among committee members now. We can get to that after the testimony.
Well, then I'll defer. That's right.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one more sentence from the Minnesota Medical Association's letter. Secondhand smoke is now considered the third leading cause of preventable death and disease.
Anyway, thank you to the two witnesses. I'll next call on Steve Peterson and Kaylin Johnson. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kaylin Johnson, and I live in Rochester. I come before you today to offer a young person's view on the proposal to ban smoking in all workplaces. I'm going to share some of my own experiences to illustrate why I believe the smoking ban should be implemented in Minnesota. First, as I understand the world, laws and rules are created to protect people. For example, I like to throw snowballs, but there is a rule at my school that says I can't throw snowballs on school property. Why? Because it is an unsafe thing to do around other kids. Some kids might choose to take their chances on a playground where snowballs are thrown. Should they have that choice? I don't think so, because their choice may harm someone else. For the safety of all, the rule is necessary. I can still throw snowballs on school at my home, just not on school property. I think a smoking ban is the same type of rule. It would protect the health and safety of lots of other people, young and old alike. Banning smoking in workplaces does not take away a smoker's right to smoke. A ban would simply protect the health of others in workplaces. Next, I've learned firsthand that cigarette smoke sticks to everything. Our family remembers one time we went to TGI Fridays for dinner for my brother's birthday. I was about 3 or 4 years old. We sat in a non-smoking section. When we got home, my mom put my pajamas on me, folded my clothes, and left them on the floor outside my bedroom. The next morning, she smelled smoke in the hallway. It was my clothes. Not only did my sweater and leggings smell horrible, but even my princess underwear, socks, and hair bows smelled like smoke. My mom was horrified, especially since we sat in a non-smoking section. So, what about employees who still choose to work in a smoky environment? This choice could have long-term consequences. It's like this. If I want to play on the street, my parents probably wouldn't go for it. Why? Because the long-term consequences of putting myself in danger would affect more than just me. It may affect my family and others forever. Same thing for employees breathing dangerous air. They may think it's their choice, but the consequences are felt by many. Sometimes when I want to do something and my parents won't let me, I ask, why not? It's not fair. They say, because it's for your own good.
My mother always said.
I bet you've used that line on your own kids. is just like this law. Some people won't like it, and they'll say, it's not fair. But it is for our own good, for our own good health, for future good health for Minnesota. Lastly, the way I see it is, smoking is a personal choice which should be done in a personal space, not affecting others. We need this smoking ban passed for our own good and for the good health of future generations like me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair.
You're a very articulate young lady. What school do you go to?
Bamber Valley Elementary School in Rochester.
And what grade are you in?
I'm in fourth grade.
You did a very nice job. A lot of people are very intimidated to come in front of the legislature. You did an excellent job. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman,
I would just say that I think the senator from Rochester is kind of intimidated now that there might be a future opponent coming up.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I kind of feel like you're asking me to perform after Prince on this. My name is Steve Peterson. I'm a member of the Bloomington City Council, and I came here today to talk a little bit about Bloomington's experience in this area. Bloomington has a long history of being interested in public health issues, and during the 2004 year, we spent several months at the City Council level and at the Commission level looking at different workplace smoking restrictions. We held over a dozen hours of hearings. We looked at a variety of technical solutions, and we ended up adopting an ordinance that went into effect in March of 2005 that's very similar to the bill that you're considering today. It had a very strong focus on workplace smoking. Wanted to talk a little bit about enforcement impact. Since the ordinance went into effect at the end of March in 2005, that's about 22 months, we've had about 30 complaints since then. None of the complaints have been from smoking in restaurants or bars by patrons. Most of the complaints are from businesses, and we've had one citation total. So in terms of enforcement impact, that was one concern that we had, and it has turned out not to be a big deal. I also want to talk for just a moment about economic impact. Bloomington, as many of you know, is a hospitality center in the state. Bloomington has over 7,000 hotel rooms, more than Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. We have about 250 restaurants, and we have 65 restaurants that serve hard liquor and beer over the 3.2% level. And I'd say that based on the data that we have, and I've got a handout that I'll distribute to the committee that has the results of the first year, the economic impact in our hotel business and in our restaurant business and in our bar business has not been a measurable thing. We have had some impact on charitable gambling receipts, but that's something that seems to be continuing a trend in that area. There's more competition in that area. And so I think as a result, I think we're pretty happy with the lack of economic impact that we've been able to measure in the city. To sum up, our workplace smoking ordinance in Bloomington has enormous public support. Polling data that we've seen shows that in the mid-70% of residents support the concept of having the workplace smoking ban. And those are polls both before and after the ordinance went into effect. Our city council unanimously added a provision to our legislative policy that supports workplace smoking restrictions at the statewide level, like what you're talking about today. And so to close, I'll urge you to adopt the proposal that's before you today, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Peterson. Is there no questions? Thank you.
Final
witness from the proponents is Pat McCone.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat McCone. I'm the Senior Director for Tobacco Control Programs and Policy for the American Lung Association Minnesota, and I'm the President of the Minnesota Smoke-Free Coalition. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today about this important health topic, and I will tell you I'm based in Duluth, the first large city to pass a policy on smoke-free environments. The time has come for Minnesota to lead once again, to fight the fight to reduce the harm and destruction caused by tobacco. We once led, we are now trailing. In this past November election, in the states of Ohio, Arizona, Nevada, and our own Mankato, The voting population showed once again how strongly they support this issue. 69-70% are the common data that young and old, conservative and liberal, independent, all those who breathe support this. It's a strong percentage. As someone said to me, what's controversial? 50% of the population in the United States is now covered by some type of smoke-free policy, with approximately 30% of Minnesotans. The Surgeon General's report is a powerful mandate to decision makers. I would also point out to you the cancer plan for Minnesota, the plan to reduce cancer in Minnesota. The top two objectives in this plan are reduce the use of tobacco, reduce exposure to secondhand smoke. A relative risk ratio, obviously very important to reducing cancer in Minnesota. We're not asking you to take a leap of faith of what might happen if Minnesota passes the freedom to breathe. We know from peer-reviewed scientific studies that support for these laws grows. We know that in Duluth, that support has grown for our policy. We know people continue to go out and eat and drink. And we also know, and I will gladly provide you the data, that people's understanding of the harms of secondhand smoke change their behavior at home, and they smoke outside. The data from the Bridge to Health in northeastern Minnesota over the past 15 years, those reporting taking smoking outside of the home has increased 300%. It's over 75% now that say they do not smoke in the home. And I will, again, gladly provide you that data. Schemes and loopholes will be proposed, many of them dealing with ventilation as the solution for this serious health problem. Let's take the advice of Philip Morris on this issue, stating, ventilation does not address health issues. Let me say that once again. Philip Morris says, ventilation does not address health issues. While it's not shown to address the health effects of secondhand smoke, ventilation does improve the sight and smell of smoke. Some will talk about a nicotine standard. I will also tell you OSHA has no standard for secondhand smoke, and the simple reason is politics and the power of the tobacco industry. There is an OSHA standard for exposure to nicotine. This standard was set for those employees that work in plants that make nicotine patches, not as a standard for exposure to secondhand smoke. Ultimately, the decision is about health. I have a developmentally disabled sister who uses a walker to get in and out of locations and in many spots has to use a wheelchair. She has wheelchair access because government said she should be allowed to go anywhere, public or privately owned. I have a brother who has severe asthma. The same government has not protected his right to breathe. There is no valid reason to protect one class of workers and not another. I, too, am a parent of teenagers whose first jobs were in the hospitality industry. And I would say to you, it is very difficult to say to a 15-year-old in northeastern Minnesota, get another job. Every single person that is exposed is at risk. There is no safe level, relative risk of 30%. My husband has heart disease. I'm not willing to take that risk. And he would like to go out and eat, because Lord knows my cooking isn't that great, no. And every worker deserves protection. It's time for smoke-free Minnesota. Communities across this state are watching and waiting. Let's not make them hold their breath any longer.
Thank you, Ms. McCone. Now I have a number of witnesses who are opposed to the bill. They're listed as opposed to the bill. Earl, Doc Smith, and William Thomas, I'll call up first. Are either of them here? Well, we'll go later. If they want to come up later, we can take them. Carol Brannon and Charles Sinkler. Go ahead, sir.
Chairman, Senators, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. And I am frankly not a fan of smoking cigarettes,
sir,
tobacco.
Could you please identify yourself?
Charles Sinkler. I own a hospitality location called Fabulous Ferns on Cathedral Hill in St. Paul. I'm also a co-chair of the Minnesota Tavern Association and past president of the Selby Avenue, Selby Area Business Association. I am not a big supporter of cigarette smoking, but I am a big supporter of my rights and my ability to run my business. Sensitivity to my customers. At Ferns, we banned smoking in our restaurant 7.5 years ago. We banned trans fats on our menu 2.5 years ago. We're very in tune with our customers. We're very in tune with the health proposals and what our customers are looking for as far as a healthy environment. Approximately 2 years ago when Ramsey County passed their smoking ban, Ramsey County smoking ban, I spent $53,000 to seal off our bar area, created, expanded the HVAC, did way more exhaust, bought HEPA and charcoal filtration units, had the area tested. We had less particles in the air on a Friday afternoon cocktail hour in my bar area than we did on the in the parking lot out in front of our location. Incredibly less than the bus stop on Selby Avenue, and naturally incredibly less than downtown St. Paul. About 7 months after we spent that money and developed that, St. Paul changed to a strict. But I should add, during that period, when we created what my customers have told me was a pristine atmosphere in our bar area and spent the money, I did pick up non-smoking customers. I had people come into the restaurant and say, wow, it's really nice in here. We appreciate it. And our business did take a little increase. About 7 months later, the city of St. Paul came in and did a strict no-smoking ban in the city of St. Paul, as did Minneapolis. Our business immediately dropped off 14%, of which it stayed basically there for it actually dropped off a little bit more for the cold weather the last couple of weeks. But it stayed in that 14 to 15% drop for the last 7-8 months. My customer is not really, it's basically my happy hour customer, my late night customers. I've talked to them. They're not traveling out of the neighborhood. They're basically going home. They're going home, and some are singles, some have families. They're basically picking up a 12-pack at the liquor store, grabbing their cigarettes, watching the Super Bowl at home. There's also a phenomenon, I've been immersed in this fight for the last couple of years, and I do think it's not fair, and I also think that the anti-smoking methodology is ineffective. It basically doesn't work. The big problem really is stopping kids from smoking. I've got a 26-year-old son and a 29-year-old daughter that works at, they both work at Ferns, and they don't smoke. And I feel very lucky and fortunate that they don't. But the problem is that kids are motivated by their peer group. And all the promotional and education and buses and $1.6 million ads on the Super Bowl and everything you can do to stop kids from smoking is not going to work. It makes it cooler. It makes it a little more mysterious. It makes it a little more rebellious. And the more money that is thrown away, and the more nonprofits and smoke clean air and all these groups and the promotional value and the media play they get, the more it motivates kids to smoke. And I think the effort should be to stop the habit. It takes a kid starts smoking, and it takes him about 3 years to actually get hooked on cigarettes. That three-year period is when a large percentage of these kids drop out and don't become full-time addicted, nicotine-addicted smokers. And that is a point where the resources that are being wasted fighting the battle against big tobacco, which in reality big tobacco doesn't even exist in my world. I've never talked to anybody from big tobacco, and I don't really want to. I'm not a fan of them. But in fact, the emphasis on the hospitality industry and passing these clean workplace acts and all that is a feel-good thing by the people that work for these organizations. It really doesn't do any good. It doesn't stop kids. It, in fact, motivates kids. Well, our situation, and based on what I've actually experienced in my place, spending the money on HVA systems and getting reaction from my customers and bringing technical equipment in to measure the particles in the air, I know for sure it's possible to treat these spaces with HVAC and filtration. You have basically five types of indoor air pollution. Of ETS, environmental tobacco smoke, is number three in the seriousness. There's VOCs, volatile organic compounds. There's pollution from pesticides we use in our businesses. There's construction material that leach formaldehyde. There's all kinds of things in these spaces. And since the late 60s in America, approximately 30% of all buildings have concentrations of these indoor air pollutants. We read about things like Legionnaire's disease, which is strictly based on environmental air pollution. There's things like Norwalk viruses and these very aggressive viruses that anybody from the health community can tell you are every day they're discovering new ones. They're more aggressive. They don't respond to old treatment. They create environments in the hospitality industry because of the diversity of people coming in and the amount of trafficking in and out. We have a concentration of those indoor air pollutants. And I will admit readily that environmental tobacco smoke is one of them. You can get rid of environmental tobacco smoke by removing the smokers. Pretty simplistic approach. If you want to really deal with bad indoor air pollution, the only answer is commercial filtration and dilution. Dilution is bringing in fresh air, about a 25% mix from the outside, filtering with HEPA and charcoal filters, and actually speaking to the indoor air quality of our buildings if that's really what you want to do. That's a health approach. A political approach is we're going to ban cigarettes. And little Caitlin, who's a great promotional person, I heard her down in Rochester when she testified down there. There's great. I don't want Caitlin in my bar. She's not 21. She can't buy a drink. I'm sorry. There's no kids in my bar. There's a state law that bans people under 18 years old. Is that my time thing? There's a state law that bans people under 18 years old from being in a place where liquor is distributed. It's not enforced, but it is on the books. So basically, I was going to come here and tell you about how badly it's impacted my business, and it's had some very, very devastating consequences to small businessmen all over St. Paul and Minneapolis. But really, someday somebody's got to wake up and say, what is the problem? Is it a political problem where we want to stamp out cigarettes? Is it a health problem where we really want to clean the indoor environment? If it's a health problem and you really want to react to the indoor environment, there are commercial answers. They're not in the Surgeon General's report, because the Surgeon General's report was basically a regurgitation of the 1986 Surgeon General's report. There has been no new research. The Surgeon General resigned 11 days after he gave his report and went to work for Canyon Valley Resorts. There's no credibility in that report. There's no credibility in most of the statistics presented. Helena, Montana, the heart attacks over 6 months went from 9 to 4 in 6 months. Well, I'd say that probably just kind of the luck of the draw and a little beep on the percentages. They don't have any strong statistics on heart attacks being reduced in the state of California, which has been smoke-free since 1996. If they did, I think someone would present it, and possibly no. I haven't heard any, and I've read everything I can on the subject for the last 2 years. I would gladly welcome any questions from anyone, and I appreciate the opportunity of speaking here.
Thank you, Mr. Sinclair. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, just two comments in regard to this witness's testimony. And the first is that the state of Minnesota has had a goal of reducing smoking in our K-12 education system over the last 4 years, and we have met it. We've reduced smoking by 25% due to the efforts of our localities who receive grants from the state of Minnesota. So the assumption that nothing works, I think, is maybe a little uninformed. The second thing I'd like to say is that the state of California is the only state in the nation that's seen a decrease in lung cancer in women. Every other state in the nation has seen increases in lung cancer among women, and they believe and have a lot of statistics to show that it is a credit to their efforts, public and private efforts, to reduce smoking in their state.
Are those questions for me?
No, I just wanted to correct your testimony because we have a lot of new members on this committee.
Thank you. Ms. Brannon, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Carol Brannon, and I live in Rochester. I volunteer with the Olmsted County Tavern Owners Association, and I am speaking on their behalf. In 2001, Olmsted County created a very fair compromise to allow smoking in bars that have 50% or greater in liquor revenue. We feel that this is a model ordinance that has been accepted throughout our county, and since its inception, we have not had one registered complaint lodged with our chamber or our visitors bureau. In fact, I am the mother of a six-year-old and the grandmother of a two-year-old, and in our county, you are very hard-pressed to go into any place and have your child be exposed to smoke, unless you bring them in a bar, which I don't recommend. This past December, the Tavern Owners Association contracted SNG Corporation to conduct our own survey because we disagreed with the survey questions that the county had used when they conducted their survey in the fall of 2006. So that we wouldn't be questioned about the integrity of the survey, we used the same consulting firm that the county used. The results of the survey proved that an overwhelming 81% of the respondents agreed that the choice of whether or not to patronize a business that allows smoking indoors belongs with the individual person, not the government. And the most interesting part of our survey was that 87% of the people who responded were non-smokers. We also received endorsements from city council members. In Rochester, we received signed endorsements from the city councils in Dover, Eota, Stewartville, Byron, and Orinoco. Those are all the counties in Olmsted County, supporting the current smoking ban in Olmsted County and supporting a statewide smoking ban that is based on the current Olmsted County smoking ordinance. They also opposed a total ban. KTTC conducted an online survey, and 65% of the respondents were opposed to a full smoking ban, and the Rochester Post Bulletin also endorsed our partial ban. We also had 4,000 petitions. 250 of those petitions were from bar employees, and in Olmsted County, we only have about 25 bars. We call them street bars that you can actually smoke in. With 250 employees, that's about 10, averaging 10 per bar. And most of those bars only have, you know, 5 or 6 employees. So I felt that we had a really good representation from bar employees, and they don't want to see a ban in their place of business. Of course, we would prefer that there would be no smoking bans in the state of Minnesota. However, if you feel the need to enact one, the Olmsted County Tavern Owners Association does support a partial smoking ban like we have in Olmsted County right now.
Thank you, Ms. Brannon. Ms. Brannon, was the county, when you say in effect right now, last month or so, didn't the board revise their ordinance?
They did, but it doesn't start until June 1st.
Oh, okay. Questions from the committee? If not, thank you both very much. I'll call on Mike McFarland and John Alexander. Let them come later if they're around. Sue Jeffers and Martin Duffy. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Thanks for having us. Prohibition didn't work the first time, and it's not going to work this time. I heard one of the senators say earlier, talking about California, how the women's lung cancer rates dropped. Well, did you know California has a 50% non-compliance rate? And they have outdoor, they can be outdoors most year-round. A lot of the states that have Clean Air Acts have exceptions. In Florida, it's freestanding bars. New York has exceptions. In Hawaii and Colorado, who just passed total smoking bans, legislation was introduced this week to amend those to include bars. You know why? Because nobody's any healthier and business has been damaged. Earlier, somebody talked about the Minneapolis study. Do you know in the Twin Cities area we have 106 bars and restaurants that have closed since the smoking bans were implemented? Whoever spoke on this issue was right. Business did increase 0.15% the first 3 months of the smoking ban. 0.15% compared with 3.4% the year before and compared with Anoka County with no smoking ban, which increased 7.6%. These are big, big numbers, you guys. It doesn't hurt the restaurants as much as it does the bars. The restaurants cater to food, and a lot of people don't mind going in for an hour or two and have a nice dinner, and they choose not to smoke. This really hurts your bars and restaurants. The Minneapolis study that I was talking about before, which some of our Minneapolis City Council members said was a flat-out joke and should never have been released, actually showed Bloomington down 8.9%. And the really ironic part is when we hear the elected officials from these areas, they tell us how great the smoking ban is. You know what? It might be if you take into consideration aggregate numbers, but if you look at individual businesses, 106 of them have closed, and thousands of jobs to go with it. This doesn't hurt big tobacco. This hurts small business owners like me. I could go on and on and on and on. I know a lot of people did, so I just want to tell you the last staff meeting that we had, I own a college bar and restaurant located near the University of Minnesota. During our staff meeting, we were trying to decide if we should buy a new high chair. A new high chair in a college bar. These bans hurt, you guys. Secondhand smoke is not mustard gas. I guarantee you, if you pass something like this, we'll be back to have it amended. We'll be back. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffers. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Jeffers, I'm sorry, but I don't understand your high chair statement.
It means normally you would think adults would come into my bar and restaurant. We have a smoke-free bar now, so the customers that come into my bar, they bring their children along so they can pound down a few beers and then jump in the car with their babies. We would rather have adults in our bars, and adults can make the decisions for themselves because they're grown-ups and they're smart enough to make that decision. A sign on the door would be all we need.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak with you. Sue and I have been through this for a couple years together, and she took a lot of my my thunder here. Basically, I guess what I'd like to do is ask you to please, when you're thinking about this thing, think very seriously, look deeply into the numbers. You all know, you've been in argumentative situations before, and you know that numbers can lie. You know the statistics can lie. How can 77% of the people polled in a survey be in favor of a smoking ban, which I was told, when in the last 2 years I've spoken with thousands of people. These are smokers, non-smokers, in my business, on the street, in downtown Minneapolis, in the Hennepin County Commissioner's offices, and you know what they told me? A smoking ban is wrong. They do not favor a smoking ban. So there you go, 77%, and I've got 100%. So you're all very intelligent. Please look very closely at these numbers. Don't believe them. Charitable gambling. It was just suggested that charitable gambling is in a downturn because in Bloomington, the bar and restaurant business has not been hurt by the smoking ban. Let's take a close look at that, the bar and restaurant. He did specify the bars had not been hurt. I would question that. Now, he said the charitable gambling is in a downturn right now. Well, that's interesting. The charitable gambling at Duffy's Bar and Grill is up over 100%. So I guess every situation is different, and everyone has to, you have to look very closely at statistics. Now, when we started this fight against a smoking ban in Hennepin County, it was suggested that this was an economic issue. And we proved that by 40 businesses going out of business that yes, it was a hardship. So what happens? What do the smoking advocates say? Well, this is not an economic issue. This is a public health issue. And by the way, folks, being a public health issue, we can do anything we want. That's basically what they told us. Now, I'm going to carry it a step further. Of course, it has been economically very difficult on how many bars, and it is a public health issue. But I'm going to take it a step further. It's a property rights and freedom of choice issue. Let me put a sign on the front of my business that says, if you enter this building, you are entering at your own risk, and you will be exposed, or you could possibly be exposed, to secondhand smoke. So then you can make a choice. Do you want to come in my business, or do you not? Allow me the option to continue to put smoke filtration systems in. I've made purchases. I'm looking at possibly making more purchases. I've got a very clean bar. It was built in 1895. There are a lot of holes in it. So it's a lot of fresh air in my business. But I am in the process of trying to make the air as clean as possible for my wife, myself, both work there, my employees. So please allow me that possibility, that option. Now, I hear about smoking in the house, in the household. You can't stop that. I hear many, many arguments. And when it comes right down to it, there's only one way that you can stop this problem. And it takes huge courage to do the right thing. If it's such an important thing, you should not wait 27 years to ban smoking in your business, if you feel that strongly about it. And if it's that important, then outlaw the sale of tobacco in Minnesota. I'm with you 100%. But it takes huge courage, and I wish you could do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Questions from the committee. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Jeffers, before the ban went into place, how did you handle employee situations where employees didn't want to be around smoke in your bar? Did you have any of those issues?
We had
come
a
up?
Ventilation system, if that's what you were
did
asking.
Did you have complaints or anything?
We never had one complaint, and ironically, the city of Minneapolis or Hennepin County, before our bans were instituted, had never had a complaint. It wasn't until the anti-smoking advocates and their boatloads of money came in and started forcing these bans down everyone's throat. Nobody ever had a complaint, ever.
Okay.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Erickson Ropes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you could help me understand how the let's not talk about the restaurants, but just the bars and taverns. If they're allowed to have their customers smoking now, and people go out because they want to drink and socialize, and all the bars go smoke-free, I don't understand how that's going to hurt the bars, because those thousands of patrons are not just going to disappear, and they probably have favorite local pubs that they love to go to, and it's the gang hangs out there, and they can still go and drink and socialize. I'm having a hard time figuring out why that would hurt the bars so badly if they're all on the same level playing field. The only thing that changes is the smoke-free status.
There's no such thing as a level playing field. There just isn't. There, even if the whole entire state was smoke-free, there's always a border, there's always a casino, and there's always non-compliance. Plain and simple, there's no such thing as a level playing field. I'm in Minneapolis, my bar and restaurant. Everybody said when St. Paul followed with their smoking ban, business would get better for me. It didn't. It doesn't. You underestimate smokers, and their non-smoking friends go wherever the smokers go. Let's say they do come to my bar. Instead of staying for 2 hours, they might stay for an hour. Instead of having three drinks, they might only have two drinks. You can't be buying drinks or food while you're outside having a cigarette. Plain and simple, on a day like this, they'd rather stay home than come to my bar where they have to go outside to smoke.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, Martin Wernemont. And then we also had, I'll call on the other witnesses who weren't here earlier, but also Steve Watson from Restaurant Association. I'm not sure if you were in favor, opposed, or neutral, but I'll call you up. Mr. Wernemont and Steve Watson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Steve Watson. I am the president of the Minnesota Restaurant Association, and I want to thank each of you for allowing me the opportunity to address you on this very important issue as it relates to the hospitality industry. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the association's board of directors, our legislative committee, and the over 1,200 restaurants that belong to our association. The issue of a statewide smoking ban has been the cause of much concern and debate amongst our board of directors and the membership. We have always held the position that it is not the role of government to dictate how our industry chooses to serve our guests. As private business owners, we feel it is our decision whether to allow smoking in our establishments, just as it is the customer's decision whether or not to patronize our businesses and an employee's decision whether or not to work for us. We continue to hold that position today. However, at this point, with more and more local governments choosing to intervene in private businesses and the probability of a statewide ban becoming increasingly likely, our legislative committee has asked me to become more involved in the debate in order to help mitigate the negative effects a statewide smoking ban would have on our industry. To that end, I would like to briefly mention the four concerns of the restaurant industry and the Minnesota Restaurant Association. First, we believe any statewide ban, if enacted, should include all industry segments, pardon me, no exceptions. We feel the best way to limit the negative impacts a ban would have on the industry is to ensure all businesses are held to the same standard. Additionally, if you truly are concerned about the health of employees, it is hard to justify how the health of a server in an establishment that serves 51% alcohol is less important than the health of a server in an establishment that serves 51% food. We thank the author for the current language that includes all industry segments and encourage the committee to keep it that way. Our second concern is with the penalties on the owners. We believe that any penalties for violating a smoking ban should be placed on the person who is actually doing the smoking, not the owner who is trying to run his or her business. This legislation charges the smoker with a petty misdemeanor, but the owner is charged with a full misdemeanor, punishable by 90 days in jail, $1,000 fine, and or both. Our third concern is with preemption. We believe that if the legislature wants to create a level playing field in the state, the ban should preempt local smoking ordinances. We currently have a patchwork of smoking ordinances throughout the state, and the language in this bill would allow that to continue. A ban needs to be uniform in the language across the state, whether it's Hibbing, Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota, St. Paul, Austin, or whatever. The ban needs to be uniform across the state. Lastly, we would ask that you think about the impact this legislation will have on the small business owners throughout the state. This will have an impact on revenues. Our industry is one that has small profit margins, with many small businesses struggling to turn a mere profit. The loss in revenue from a smoking ban will force establishments to close. We hope that you will look to ways to offset business costs of this bill through some sort of tax break. Let me remind you, tourism is one of the four top revenue-producing industries in our state, with over $10 billion in sales annually. The very people that serve as hosts for tourism and the guests that come to our state are the small restaurant businesses you may force to close if this legislation is not done properly. Mr. Chair, thank you. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. Are questions from the committee? Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Watts, I don't think you realize it, but you inadvertently addressed one of my biggest concerns, and that's this, Mr. Chair and others. There's no way for us to address the fact that regardless of what we do for a smoking ban in the state of Minnesota, some of the largest dining areas in Minnesota will be exempt from the ban. Some of the largest bars in Minnesota will be exempt from the ban, and some of the largest convention areas in Minnesota will be exempt from the ban. They're in Indian-owned casinos. What happens to my small towns around those casinos? Thank you.
And I don't have an answer for that one.
Thank you. Questions? Other questions from the committee? If not, I'll call one more time on those who called on earlier. Earl Doc Smith. Or William Thomas, or Mike McFarland, or John Alexander, or Mark Wernemont.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, there's a Mr. Tom Barrett here that if we have time, I'd like to hear a little bit of the information he has, if we could.
Sure, if you would like, Mr. Baird.
Barrett, I think it is.
Okay. Go ahead. Please identify yourself for the tape. And then we'll begin with discussion amendments as well.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board. It's kind of like hopefully this is the opportunity where we talk of neutrality, because I do want to stress the board's neutral on the issue, the policy of the smoking ban. But the reason I think I'm here is obviously we've heard from a lot of the charitable gambling. We've heard some of the testimony in some of the other areas. And I just want to give some quick background for the benefit of information for the committee. But as I mentioned, the board is neutral, but part of the mission of the board is not only to maintain the integrity of the games of charitable gambling, but also to work with those charitable organizations so that they can raise money for the bottom line. And it was with that focus that once the smoking ban started to be passed around the state, we started tracking the impact of the smoking bans. And the focus has been in those areas that had a smoking ban, what was the impact? And what we were finding, obviously, I think it's no news, that we saw a significant decrease in the activity in the gross receipts. And so we looked at continuing to track, not playing any really role in the policy side at all, other than to make contact with those charitable organizations, those areas. We provided some information to the local units of government, City of Bloomington, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and those folks, just by way of information. And I'm pretty much offering the same, too. I do have some information just on the small things we've been tracking in terms of the communities that are affected. But a couple of points I thought if it would be all right, is we have seen some obvious differences in the enforcement or the restrictions. As you recall, Hennepin County started off with what I would say is a full ban. St. Paul, the other side of the river, had a partial ban. And somewhere during the course of the last 2 years, Hennepin County went to a modified ban, and St. Paul went to a full ban. And so we use some of those examples to track the data, the sales, the activity, again, with the emphasis on what's happening with the charitable organizations. And what we found is, in using Hennepin County first, they were roughly in a 20% drop in gross receipts. When they went to an exemption, allowing bars that had 50% or more, an exemption from the restrictions, those sites went up over 9%. Now, statewide gambling receipts are down. We know that. They're roughly about 5%, 4.8%. Conversely, over in St. Paul, under partial ban, their receipts had dropped roughly 15%. When they went to a full ban, using the last month, November, as a comparison that we had the records, they're down upwards of 40% as relates to gross receipts from the charitable gambling. But as you can see in the handout, there's different areas have different rates. We see Bloomington currently dropped about 21%. And the concern we have there is Bloomington was one of the first communities that instituted a smoking ban, and we heard about it'll come back. And it might, but it hasn't yet as relates to charitable gambling. And so, again, the only purpose really coming today is we're going to continue to work with the industry that we regulate. Should a ban happen, depending upon how bad a ban or whatever the ban is, we want to try to work with those charities to see what the impact and how it's going to affect whether it's youth hockey, the veterans, but also the local units of government, as well as the state, because we know there's a gambling tax. We know there's contributions that go to the local units as well. And so that's, I think, the purpose in terms of when we look at fiscal impact. I believe we've been asked by Department of Finance to lend our 2 cents as relates to a fiscal note, and so we'll be doing that as well. But I do offer this information as it relates strictly to the charitable gambling and the impact we've seen from smoking bans.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Chairman. Senator Corrigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank Mr. Barrett for coming and testifying. And a question for Senator Sharon. I guess I could have looked through the bill. My question is in this bill, does this, our Native American friends, does this ban smoking in all the casinos then? Does your bill ban that?
This bill only focuses on those things that the state of Minnesota has authority over.
Okay.
And so, like we do not have authority over Wisconsin or Iowa, we do not have authority over the Indian reservations. They're their own nation, and they apply their own rules.
Okay.
I think it's important. I'd like to add at this point, though, when we're talking about the casinos, just under 50% of the casinos also do not allow alcohol. So when we're talking about competitiveness, there is the other issue too, that many of these businesses do not compete with the casinos in the sale of alcohol because they 50% of them do not allow it.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just I guess I was just kind of wondering if I was just curious of what if there's any movement as far as the casinos are concerned to go to a smoke-free smoke-free casinos, and so I was just wondering if anybody here knows that the answer to that question at all, or I guess not. So, all right, thank Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Other Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baird, just to be clear, is it your testimony that smoking makes people more generous?
Mr. Chair and Senator, no, I don't draw any correlation there at all.
Okay, thank you.
Further question? If not, discussion from the committee or amendments? Or Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My interest in, and I'm a sponsor of the bill also, my interest in a smoke-free ban is that currently Minnesota is spending $2.6 billion annually on healthcare-related costs due to tobacco-related healthcare costs, and we spend $341 per person every year. So this is a tremendous expense for the state of Minnesota and something that we need at this point to seriously address because healthcare costs are so totally out of control. Duluth was my hometown. Duluth was the first large city in the state of Minnesota to go smoke-free. And we had people complaining that it was going to hurt business, that bars and restaurants were going to go out of business. And quite frankly, there were two or three bars that did go out of business. But what we found out is that, in fact, usage or attendance at those restaurants and bars increased significantly. And I realize this is anecdotal. We had people who were lobbying us constantly about not going smoke-free, and some of our most famous restaurants and bars. Today, those people are on board saying, we support this. This is the best thing that ever happened to our business. We've got more business than we've ever had before. Duluth has a casino in the middle of our downtown. All our restaurants and bars surround it, and we still have a thriving hospitality industry. I have records here that show, and this is after accounting for inflation. We went smoke-free in 2000. After accounting for inflation, we still have increases of 1.6 to 3.4% annually in our food and beverage sales. So it has everybody crying and complaining about how this was going to hurt business. It has in fact, people have changed their attitude about things. They appreciate the ability to come out into a facility that is not smoke-free. And we find, we go out and find a thriving business. There were times that restaurants were closing in the past. I'm not certain it was from the smoke-filled rooms. But it was something that was really hurting us. And we found that because we were smoke-free, we were a destination for tourists that wanted to come someplace that was a healthy place to be. So I think that my first priority is that the healthcare costs are so significant, we need to do something about it. But the other thing is, I think we adjust. I think we grow. I think we change the way we do things, and I think we can make the best of it once we go smoke-free. Also, Wisconsin is talking about going smoke-free and increasing their tobacco tax at this time, too. That will help us in that respect, too. And what I'd like to do is pass out some charts I have of the effect, I don't know if you can say the effect. What I can tell you is what the tables show since we've gone smoke-free in Duluth.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Coring.
Mr. Chairman, I do have the A3 amendment. If I could have that distributed at this time. And if I could just talk about it a little bit, and then I do have somebody that wants to come forward to talk about it, Mr. Chairman.
While it's being distributed, why don't you present it, and then
Mr. Chairman, what this is my understanding that this is what the Olmsted County version, and which kind of what separates off the bar from the restaurant with a closed wall and closed door, and then if you look at the bill through 1.16. It kind of gradually works up the percentages of alcohol being served, and then it has the HVAC ventilation system too. So If Mr. Sinclair could come forward and maybe give his comments on this, just to have the debate on this, I think it's important that we talk about this also. So,
welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. Senators, this briefly, I touched on it before in my testimony. And what it is there has been in the last 20 years since the Surgeon General's report in 1986 a tremendous amount of advancement in everything, you know, everything technical that we're exposed to in our everyday lives. There's been incredible increases in technology as far as filtering and air ventilation, HVAC. We are proposing that the individual operator has a choice of treating the air in his room and creating an indoor air environment that would, in fact, be cleaner than the existing air in the environment sans the smokers. Take the smokers out of the mix. Our environment with correct HVAC and filtering would be cleaner and healthier than that product that you'd end up with just removing the smoking. Smoking, ETS, environmental tobacco smoke, is one of five very serious health hazards that are in buildings. And the reason that they're in our buildings today is in the early 60s when OPEC had the big energy crisis. A technique was used in construction and renovation where the emphasis was on energy efficiency. So these buildings were built very tightly, and they're not like the old-fashioned buildings where they breathed and you had a lot more air movement in the buildings. That has caused, for example, in my restaurant, once every 2 months we bomb the place. Late at night, we put all the dishes away, we cover all the foodstuffs up, and we bring people from Ecolabs in, and they bomb the place for bugs, cockroaches, fruit flies, whatever you have, whatever everybody has in the hospitality industry. Well, in the last year, researching the ventilation aspect of how we can cope with these smoking bans, I realize that every time I do that in that space, that insecticides and that pollution doesn't leave my building. And that was one of, along with all kinds of other things, cleaning supplies, the formaldehyde from the glue in the carpet, the formaldehyde from particle board, the ozone given off by the printers on the POS systems in our industry, right down to probably my single employee that's at the highest risk in my whole restaurant is the fellow that sits at the grill and charbroils hamburgers. Because a lot of the real carcinogens in cigarette smoke are the same that are in hamburgers. They're caused by combustion of organic products, whether it's leaves of tobacco leaves or hamburger or leaves in your backyard. It's all the same thing. Those are the things that cause cancer. So it's tough to get away from them in our everyday life. I want to be able to go in my location and feel good about having my guests, my employees, my family working there, and I'm willing to spend the money to do it. And the industry says it's possible. Now, if you take, and I listened to these fantastic numbers. You know, the other day we spoke over at the house, and we had one person say it was 30,000 deaths a year. The next person right behind him said 40,000. And then Dr. Hurt came in with 55,000. And it's just like the numbers are fantastic. I know that, and I've read in medical journals, that a cigarette smoker keeps 85 to 90% of all the bad things off that cigarette in his lungs. So he expels 10 to 15% in a secondhand smoke environment. I've got information on factories, on suppliers, manufacturers of filtration equipment, and these are the Honeywells of the world. They're not the fly-by-night smoke-eater people. These are big institutional companies, big manufacturers, that they guarantee they can take 98% of the particles out of the air. So I smoke a cigarette, 85% stays in my lungs. Worst case, 15% goes out in the air, and these HVAC people can filter 98% of that. I contend that the dosage is harmless, that you can take an environment, you can allow people to do whatever they want to do, and there's plenty of opportunity if you want to go to a non-smoking facility. I think in the city of St. Paul, about 82% of our restaurants before the smoking ban were non-smoking facilities to begin with. I would also contend that
Mr. Sankler, can you wrap it up, though, because
sure,
the time is it's getting a little bit away from the
Okay, I'm sorry. But that basically the HVAC is a possibility. It is a distinct possibility. It exists. I had a handout from a company up in Canada that they talk 98%. They use carbon filters for the gases. They use HEPA filters for the particulates. And they use a ultraviolet lighting system at the back end of the at the filtration process that kills all organic anything organic live bacteria virus in the area. When the indoor air pollution goes through that system, it's returned to the atmosphere as carbon dioxide and water. That's all there's left.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Did you finish?
I didn't finish.
Okay. Senator Wergen and then Senator Sharon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question of clarification for Senator Solon or Senator Coring or whomever. I understood Senator Solon to say that Duluth has a total ban, but I thought Duluth had a separation. In other words, if you had a walled-off bar, you could still smoke because the voters in Duluth voted to have that.
That is correct.
So Duluth only has a partial ban.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just say that this is my attempt to have us have a partial ban. It appears that the voters have spoken in Duluth, and I'm trying to in this instance try to have a compromise, if you will.
Senator Sharon,
I'm uncertain about the process. Is the bill introduced so that we're talking about amendments now?
Yes, this is the bill. Well, we will have.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill.
Senator Higgins moves Senate File 238 to put the bill in front of us, and Senator Coring has moved the A3 amendment to that bill. So if you want to comment on his amendment, you're welcome to do so.
Thank you very much, Chair Marty. I would encourage people to vote against the amendment, and I would point out that the reasons for that, particularly the concern about ventilation, I have to refer you back to the significant findings in the Surgeon General's report. For those of you who have had a chance to look at it, you can find on page 14, and I referred in my earlier comments that there are 10 chapters. One of them specifically deals with ventilation, and in that report it is clearly stated by not just the Surgeon General, but a repetitious group of scientists, 40 scientists, then another 30 scientists reviewing this, that exposure of non-smokers to secondhand smoke cannot be controlled by air cleaning or mechanical air exchange. In addition to the Surgeon General's report, is this report, and I can name companies that agree that ventilation systems do not eliminate health risks caused by secondhand smoke, Allergy Control Products, Allergy Buyers Club, Brookstone, Honeywell, IQ Air, Peak Pure Air, Radio Shack, The Sharper Image, United Air Specialists, Wine Products. Ventilation does not protect your health, and the tobacco industry knows it. Philip Morris carries a disclaimer. So ventilation company after another is clearly saying that they are not supportive of the public's reliance on ventilation systems, along with the Surgeon General, to reduce the level of risk in restaurants and bars.
Further discussion of the A3 amendment. Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Senator Coring. We're all concerned about small businesses, and you know we've heard a little bit of the potential for economic impact on small businesses with the ban. But with your amendment, Senator, doesn't this disadvantage small bars and restaurants compared to the larger ones who are going to be able to afford the great big huge ventilation systems and the high-end systems that our witness is talking about, whereas your hometown small bar won't be able to afford these, and then the competition is all over the place again.
Well, I think you've got a point there, but what I'm trying to do is have a compromise amendment here so that businesses, at least the businesses that I've talked to in my district, this still gives them the opportunity to try to stay in business and to try to put in this type of air cleaning system and to wall off if they have a restaurant part and have it separated from the bar part. So it what it really, I'm just trying to have a compromise here, Senator, so to try to help out at least the my constituents who I've talked to who have expressed their concerns.
So. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Lynch and then Senator Johnson. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair and Senator Sharon. I just wanted to, with regard to the amendment before us, felt compelled to chime in on the voters of Olmsted County who have spoken loud and clearly. And I represent about half of Olmsted County. And I know that this was an issue that was long and hard debated in my community, to be sure, and would echo Senator Sharon's remarks with regard to this amendment. And I'm appreciative of Senator Solon reminding us of the root cause of why we're here having this discussion today, and I believe that that goes back to the escalating health care costs and the direct impact that this has on that factor. So.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to point out that the amendment has a phase in over. You can phase it in over time based on your percentage of sales, and I think it's a good option.
It's backwards. They should have it.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? If not, on the A3 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion. Chairs in doubt. All those. All those in favor, raise your hand.
Two,
six. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Further amendments.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Senator,
I have the A07 amendment.
While the A07 amendment is being distributed, could you explain it, please?
Mr. Chair, recognizing that there are actually multiple issues here, it's not just a public health issue, it's also a property rights issue. There are several things that I think we've forgotten, and it's pretty easy for sometimes the majority to run over the minority. In other words, a small minority of people own these properties, and their rights are pretty much being stepped on by what we're doing here today. And so what I'm proposing is that the state do put a ban on. However, if someone wishes to continue having smoking in their environment, they will need to apply for a annually renewed license at a cost which is based on their seating capacity in the smoking section of their facility. So, and actually it says that there will be $5 annually per seat in the smoking section of the facility. And so if we're talking about the costs of public health and you consider the number of seats in these facilities, and all, by the way, the proceeds would go to the healthcare access fund, it would also begin to mitigate the costs that we're talking about while we're protecting the private property rights of the individuals that own the property. And I'd like to add a verbal amendment, if I could, to my amendment at the end of 1.12 after the period, add an additional sentence that says, no one under the age of 19 shall be permitted in a licensed smoking section of the facility.
Senator Worgen, could you repeat the language on line 12?
No one under the age of 19 shall be permitted in a licensed smoking section of the facility. So we also would totally take away the exposure of children in that facility because they would not be allowed in the facility.
Senator Worgen will offer the 22 amendment with the with that language incorporated. Is there a discussion on that? Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Chair Marty. I would just like to remind the committee that the notion that what is happening here is that we're stepping all over businesses' rights or individual rights is a characterization that disregards what the underlying principles are for this, which are to protect the rights of people from the negative impact of secondhand smoke, particularly workers in the workplace. I also would like to remind the members of this commission that there is no business that can say that their property rights or their business has the right to operate without regulation. I cannot think of a single business that operates without regulation, including restaurants, bars, banks, and the company that I am a partner in that is strongly regulated by the government, and that when those regulations change, our economic income is impacted, often in a negative way, by that regulatory process. This is not new, it's not different, and we cannot get into a situation every time the government changes a regulation that is to protect the public or to protect the consumer, that it's obligated to find a way to reimburse the businesses for their losses. So I'm very, very committed to this body understanding that this is about protecting the health of the public and the worker in the workplace, and that to do less would be to abandon that and also to disregard the public health costs to the public health system that we're all working very hard to contain.
Further discussion on amendment. Senator Worgen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, there's a pretty distinct difference here between some of the regulations that we have for bars and restaurants than what we're doing with smoking. For instance, all of the regulations that apply to the kitchens and to the food and the handling of the food and everything like that, if you don't have those and you have a it's not mine. Cell phones do that, by the way. If you don't have those regulations and food is mishandled, you have a food poisoning outbreak from that evening in that restaurant. In other words, if you go to a big restaurant chain and they serve 300-400 people in an evening's time, if they're serving a contaminated food, there's a major outbreak. It's not the same with what we're talking about today. Just because someone walks into a restaurant tonight where they're smoking, there's not going to be a major outbreak of lung cancer from the people that walked into that building. There's a significant difference as to how far we'll go for what we perceive to be the public's health. And I think I do, too, just very much believe that this is also a property rights issue. I truly do.
Further discussion on the 0022 amendment. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Further amendments? If not,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Soul, and then Senator Fischbach. Will you just make a motion? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you would accept an oral amendment, which would be to, on page 6, delete lines 622 and 623. And this, I have an issue that we name legislation all the time. And I don't think it's necessary. I think we can call it the Freedom to Breathe Act all we want, but do we have to put this kind of thing into statute over and over?
Sir Fischbach, you've been consistent on that.
Thank you. Consistency is important, Mr. Chair.
I agree. Is there discussion on that amendment? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Further discussion? Senator Dahl.
I just have a couple of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With Senator Sharon. And maybe some other members who might know this answer. The underlying goal here is for us to reduce the amount of smoking that's going on. And are there any numbers to show any of the bans that have gone on in the cities or in states that show what kind of decrease in smoking there has been? Or more likely, what is the reduction in cigarette sales? I mean, is there a number there that we can see?
Senator
Senator Marty.
Senator Sarin, if you wish
Thank
to.
Thank you. Senator Dahl. No, the purpose of this legislation is not to reduce smoking. There are other efforts to reduce smoking, and there are persons who are involved in this that have that as a part of their objective. But the objective of this legislation is to reduce the impact of secondhand smoke in the workplace. So I'm not prepared to talk about the impact of smoking overall or the reduction of smoking sales. The right to smoke is protected in this. It is not the intention of this bill to be a temperance movement. It is directed towards enclosed spaces, workspaces, and the protection of the worker. So I can't respond to those questions.
I do have a follow-up then. I guess I'm also a little bit troubled by the legislation in that, you know, I'm a non-smoker. I would like us not to be smoking as well, but we're all adults at this point, especially when it regards to bars, and that we should be able to make that choice whether we enter the place or whether we want to be employed there. And I guess I would like to see some exceptions, at least for that particular part of it. I'm troubled that we would take that choice away from adults in this regard if it's for their safety. I understand for children, but as Senator Hahn has pointed out, and I tend to agree, that if we start to limit people's choices of where they're going to smoke, they're more likely to smoke in their home or in their car, and children don't have the choice to walk away or make another choice of where they're going to be. I think I would like to know that we're actually having an impact by putting a ban statewide. If it's simply to, you know, create a level playing field for some of the bars out there, I'm not so concerned about the level playing field as I am for the health of the, you know, especially the children here. And they seem to be not, you know, talked about as much. Caitlin's testimony was eloquent. I loved it. It's yet, you know, there will be a day when she's not going to want to listen to her parents. She wants to make her own choice as to what she's going to do. And choice is a big part of, you know, being adults in this country. So I again, I'm very troubled that we're putting a ban to take that right away.
Further discussion? Not Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I move that Senate File 238 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs.
As amended.
Senator Pretner.
As amended.
As amended. Yes, Senator Pretner Solon moves Senate File 238 as amended be recommended to pass in the Committee on Jobs. Business and whatever it's called. Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm just wondering. I'm wondering if it would be appropriate for this committee to hear some testimony about some of the scientific evidence that is used that is underlying the basis of this legislation. I'm very troubled by some of what I've heard here about the assertions of deaths and other things that I can find, and I have looked over the past 2 years to try to find substantial proof that those things are established in the science, and I haven't found those things. And I've asked the proponents of the legislation a number of times to provide me with the risk ratios that are statistically significant to show that the level of risk of this is high enough to warrant what I think is a fairly dramatic remedy, which is to affect the rights of people in their private property to do things. And as we've seen, even trying to modify that to allow it to happen under certain circumstances is not deemed to be acceptable to this committee. And I'm wondering if there is not a need to have some evidence presented to this committee that would establish that. And to that purpose, maybe it would be good to just table this bill until we have an opportunity to secure that kind of testimony. Would you, as the chairman, be willing to entertain some testimony on that subject?
Senator Hahn, we gave both sides pretty much the time they felt they needed to make their presentations, and obviously you were not persuaded that by the health issues. I don't intend to have another hearing on it. You are able to make motions, but I would encourage I think the committee has had two and a half hours of discussion and debate, and some are going to support it, some are not.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to make a motion to table it, but one thing I will say is it only came to my attention that this bill was going to be introduced the end of last week. I thought it was still a local issue, so I am kind of surprised by the fast track of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Johnson, the bill has been introduced for several legislative sessions and has been heard by this committee last session, and I believe the session before that.
I would argue this is new.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to point out, Senator Johnson's new to this committee, so she's...
Right, I figured she might not know that, but if she's followed this issue at all, she would realize that.
Lots of members of this committee are new. Is there further discussion of the Pretner Solon motion? Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to just make a comment, I guess. I know that I have raised some concerns about this bill and tried to ask some questions. I know others of this panel have as well. And I'm not a smoker, and I think that the great majority of people don't smoke and don't like to be around smoking. It's something like, 75% of the population or 80%, whatever it is, large percentage. And I think smokers as a minority are probably the most uniformly demonized. It's very hard to find an argument to justify a habit that most people, even the smokers, will admit is not necessarily a very attractive habit. But I think that this remedy is extreme and excessive, and I think that whatever we do, we're going to have a certain number of people in our society that will use tobacco. And I just think it is unwise to say that we're not going to try to make any kind of accommodation for those people to live in the society and be part of the public society. I think I don't understand that. I know commonly people think, well, anybody that objects to a smoking ban is, being paid off by big tobacco or something. And I'm not aware of any tobacco lobbyists in this legislature. And I don't know if anybody else has been approached by any lobbyists. I have not. The only people I've talked to on this bill have been people who have been in favor of the bill. And I think it's fair to say that an overwhelming number of people do support this because most people don't smoke. But I do think that we have an obligation as a society to make accommodation and tolerate people with whom we may not agree. And I don't see much willingness to tolerate the habits of this minority of people and find a way to accommodate what they're doing, which is legal, and do so in a social way. And so I'm troubled by this bill, and I'm troubled by what I think has been a failure on the part of the science and to establish the claims. I have done research on my own and gone on the Internet, and everything that has been said here, you can find others who refer to the Surgeon General's report, or they quote other doctors, and they say that exactly the opposite, that the science doesn't establish this, that the risk ratios are very low compared to other things that we commonly accept as tolerable risk for what we do. So I would urge members of this panel to rethink this. I would like to see this voted down, and perhaps we can find an accommodation or a compromise similar to what Senator Coring or Senator Wergen has offered, and be more cautious as we go forward. So thank you.
Senator Wergen, and then we'll vote.
Mr. Chair, I don't smoke either, and I don't have anything to do with tobacco lobbyists, and I wish no one smoked. And I'll choose a smoke-free restaurant over a smoking restaurant anytime I go out to smoke. No. Okay. Blew that one. I'll choose a smoke-free restaurant any day of the week because I prefer that by far. But I still think this is very much stepping on property rights, and it certainly does not address what I indicated earlier about the American Indian-owned casinos. And I have nothing against them, and I'm very happy that a lot of them have chosen not to have the alcohol mixed with the gambling. I admire that choice on that they've made in some of the casinos. But, Mr. Chair, I would dare to say that if we started telling people they couldn't smoke in their own home, we'd have a whole lot more people here than we do today saying this is wrong because it's private property. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about private property, and we're talking about stripping away private property rights.
Thank you. On that... no further discussion. All those in favor of Senator Pretner Solon's motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. With that, the business is done and committee's adjourned.
Good job.